Hello and welcome to Too Fast, Too Forever. There's all kinds of family, we chose this one. This is episode 60, Pit Stop Into the Blue from 2005. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe Too, and this episode is brought to you by Stewart Cove's Dive Bahamas. Before you start learning more about the company, there's one thing he would like to clear up. There is no location, beach, or inlet called Stewart's Cove yet. Instead, the company carries his name, Stewart Cove, to reflect the quality and personal attention that you will receive from his staff and him each and every day. Stewart Cove's. That's a great diving...
Do you think if you're born with the last name Cove, like, you have to go in that career path?
I think we've hit a point now, a lot of mothers name their sons names that only can be NFL players. Like, haha, Clinton Dix, you're either not going to have a job or you're going to play a professional sport, and that's what you get. I think Stewart Cove was destined to be a diving instructor.
Closer to home, our buddy Chris podcasts, I mean, it was only inevitable that he would be a podcaster. So I hope, if you're listening to this, that you saw the note in last week's description. You saw our tweet last week that we have pushed Tammy and the T-Rex off to later in the lap. We'll get the catch-up in our extracurricular activity coming up next, but the timing wasn't exactly going to work out. We will cover Tammy this lap, but we cannot cover Tammy today. Instead, we're covering Into the Blue, which, if you have not watched it yet and you want to watch it, you do not need to see this movie. Like, it's not a terrible movie. This is also the patron pick, so I don't want to be too mean on it. We put up the four options for which movie our patrons over at patreon.com/TooFastTooForever wanted to vote on. Three of the six picked this one. Overwhelming favorite. I think it was like 3-1-1, and then somebody didn't vote. This was the far and away the favorite. I'm going to say you do not need to watch this movie. It's not a terrible movie, but it's not essential viewing. But if you want to see the movie, it's available to stream for free right now on both Amazon Prime and Hulu. So if you have either of those, go watch it.
Yeah.
Paul Walker, Jessica Alba, we'll talk about it after the break. But Joe, I mentioned extracurricular activities since we last recorded Fast and Furious 6. What have you been up to? We had Thanksgiving in between. What did you do for Thanksgiving?
I had Thanksgiving, which is my favorite holiday of all time. Rachel's parents came to visit. We had a wonderful Thanksgiving full of lots of fun, adventurous things. I like to do a deep-fried turkey. I deep-fry a turkey every year. Do you know that?
No, I don't know. I don't think so.
We tried deep-frying a turkey, like, a couple years ago, and it's awesome.
Okay.
The thing is, like, 5 minutes for the turkey and then 3 minutes a pound is, like, the rule of thumb.
Okay.
So, like, generally for, like, 16 to 18-pound turkey, you're looking at, like, 45 to, like, an hour.
Okay.
Which is, like, that's fucking awesome.
So you don't have to cook it. This is the cooking. This is everything.
That's, like, from, like, when you dip the turkey to taking the turkey out. You have to heat the oil.
Right, but, like, you don't put it in, like, you don't cook it in the oven and then fry it. Yeah, this is just, like,
from,
like, you season it or whatever and then just toss it in the fryer.
Yep. We've started doing it this way. It is incredible. Highly recommended, but do it outside. Be safe. But it's a great thing. Rachel and her mom love it because we stay out of the kitchen.
Mm.
Like, me and Kevin go outside and you have to, like, watch the turkey to make sure it doesn't catch on fire, which means you get to drink beers outside.
As long as it's a Corona.
As long as it's a Corona. And so, like, we sit outside, like, watch football, drink beers, and, like, just make sure this thing doesn't explode, which it won't. They stay inside and get the full oven, right? Because, like, that's, like, a big thing for Thanksgiving.
Sure. You
have a turkey in there. You don't have, like, room for other shit in the oven.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Black Friday, we woke up. Rachel had to do some work things. So I took Rachel's parents to the Vinegar Syndrome pop-up shop in Bridgeport.
Which is Tammy and the T-Rex adjacent or related or explicitly part of it.
They had it at this record store. Dude, you would love this place.
So this is not an always Vinegar Syndrome. This is just like a special for Black Friday. This is where they popped up.
Their official headquarters office is in Bridgeport. I didn't know that. I thought it was kind of random that it was in Bridgeport because this felt like a very like Brooklyn, Williamsburg type thing.
Was it crowded?
Right? No.
We were trying to figure out if it was going to be sold out, if it was going to be hard to get, blah, blah, blah. I ordered one that's going to be shipping, I guess, tomorrow. You said it's not Brooklyn, it's Bridgeport. But even then, I was still thinking, like, people in the New York area without something to do would maybe make the pilgrimage. Like, it's only, like, an hour from the city. But I guess I guess not.
It coincides with Record Store Day. That's when they release, like, you know, all the Record Store Day specific releases.
Yep.
So they do, like, you know, special things. It's always Black Friday, and you go support your local record store. They have, like, rare, you know, re-release, rare things, picture discs. And then, so we go into the record store, and it's this, like, tiny, like, divey-looking record store. But they had all this cool shit. They had, like, all kinds of old, like, movie cards, you know, like, the packs of, like, Jurassic Park cards. You know what I mean? Like, all of these kind of things.
There was an episode, I think, of Cage Club Revisited, where we opened a pack of those cards because Mike bought a couple. He and I and Kyle, the Foodie Films man himself, were watching a movie, and there was a piece of gum in there, and Kyle ate the gum, and it just dissolved in his mouth. A gum from the 80s just dissolved in his mouth. And so that's on our Instagram, the Cage Club Pod Instagram. I'm very, very well versed with those movie pack cards. But there's like, so it's all the old vintage ones that are just ready to be purchased.
Still wrapped, that you could still buy. They had a bunch of VHS, a bunch of Laserdisc. It was more than a record store. It was like an archive. It's called The Archive. That's the name of the store. So that gives you like an idea of it. Then we go in, and upstairs they had the Vinegar Syndrome pop-up shop. And they had all of their releases, and also like the Syndicate. I think that's like a partnership with them or something. Do you know about this?
No, but like Vinegar Syndrome did a lot of stuff with the Draft House in Austin. Like, I think there's just like kind of a cluster of those kind of companies interested in that kind of thing that all partner up on. Just basically, I guess for financial, but also like backing and whatever.
Yeah, I'm assuming that they're all like getting them pressed at the same place and stuff like, you know what I mean? It's all like a team effort kind of thing. But this is like, there was like a ton of like old smut, you know, like the five showing porno films that you would like see at the porno theater, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a ton of those, and like we were there, and like Kevin's like, I know the names of the, you know what I mean? Like I remember these things. And then they had like a bunch of really cool movie posters that like I was tempted, I didn't even send you pictures of the movie posters because they were so fucking cool, and they were like original movie posters. They were like $20 each, but it was like her vagina ate her or whatever,
right?
You know what I mean? Like the weirdest ones you could get. Some t-shirts and shit. They had Tammy and the T-Rex. Yeah, it was really cool. It was like a fun pop-up shop. It was something that I think that next year if they did it again, I would say come up and visit for it, just because I want you to see the store. I think you would have a good time in it, and if you came to visit, I would take you to this store now, because I think it's just like a very interesting store. Even if you wouldn't buy anything, I think you'd probably would buy something, but like even if you didn't, it's like a really interesting store for like you, Larson, you know, these kind of Mike, you guys would all dig through it. It would be like a really cool store for you.
Yeah, it was the kind of thing that I would want to go to, but spending 5 hours in a car on a weekend where I was already doing other things with friends and stuff like that, it was
just a
tough ask. But
I say next time you come up, we take a ride down. It's only 20 minutes from
me,
and we go check out the store just so you could see it. Because like you're not going to have the Vinegar Syndrome pop-up shop, but at the same time, you're going to get a lot of everything else. And you can buy the Vinegar Syndrome stuff online if you want. So
very cool. Did you do anything else between last weekend and today?
We started a new tradition. Did 2 years in a row. I think 3 years makes it a tradition, right?
I've heard two, but either way, you're close. You're either there or you're close.
We now go the weekend after Thanksgiving. Matt, Zach, Adam, me, Rachel's parents, Rachel, and we all go and we do an escape room.
Okay.
So they give you like the list of like times, right? They're like, this is like, you know, what the best times of the month were. You know, you get an hour. So, like, all of them are usually, like, 45 minutes, mm-hmm. whatever. This one was all, like, 55.
Okay.
It was, like, the best times of the month. So we were, like, oof. It was, like, werewolf-themed.
Okay.
Okay? Not, like, Twilight werewolves, but, like, actual
classic
werewolves.
Vintage werewolf.
Vintage werewolf. You're in a log cabin. The werewolf is trying to get you or whatever. We just make a really great escape room team. Everybody has their own kind of jobs, and we, like, kind of, like, piece it together. But, like, we split into groups really well. We're, like, nervous, and we're like, oh, fuck. Like, we don't think we're going to finish. And then, like, all of a sudden, we, like, get out, and the dude's like, wow, that was, like, the fastest time for this one.
Wow.
And we were like, what, really? And he's like, yeah, there's, like, two, there's an alternate ending, but we got the fastest time for the ending that we did, which was the more complicated ending.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, and we were like, holy shit, that's awesome. So
did you win anything, or it's just, like, it's an honor thing?
It's just, like, an honor thing, but we were just, like, we didn't think we were gonna finish it, and we were all, like, doing different things, and, like, you know, confused, and, like, doing different other things. I was like, oh, man, sorry, like, there's, like, one part where I was like, I know that it must have been frustrating. Oh. They had this, like, rock, right? And they're like, well, you could charge the rocks by putting it next to, like, the element that it is. So, like, I had the wind one, and, like, I needed to charge it. And I found, like, every vent in this fucking escape room that wasn't the, like, triggering vent. Like, I was finding, like, the real vents.
Yeah.
And I was, like, putting the rock next to these, and he's like, maybe you want to try the other room. And
I'm
like, I know what to do, and, like, I'm doing it, but, like, I just can't find the vent that they're trying to get you to put it next to. Like, I'm using, like, the actual room vents. And he's like, come on, man. And I was like, sorry. And he's like, no, dude, like, you guys were blowing through it. It was crazy. That was my whole fun weekend. I have some other cool stuff coming up in a couple weekends that maybe I didn't even tell you about yet.
What have I done since last? When did we last record? That was, I guess, last Tuesday. So I did Thanksgiving, with my parents. Not anything out of the ordinary, but it was a nice, lots of food, football, cool. All that sort of fun stuff. Black Friday was fun. We were going to record some podcasts here for Tub Talk, and that fell through.
Okay.
But instead, I went down the shore, and we hung out, and we went and played Frisbee in the park, which was, like, cold,
oh,
but it
cool.
was just really fun. And nice. Then we went to this place called Pete and Elda's. And Pete and Elda's is sort of like a locally famous place down the shore because it's everyone's favorite pizza spot. And they have a challenge there that if you eat a double XL pizza by yourself, pay for the pizza, but you get a t-shirt to commemorate the occasion. And so the pizza's $17. And so all five of us there were just
is it
like...
Is huge? But you said by yourself, so you each got one.
We each got one. So we got five double XL pizzas.
Is it huge?
No. It's probably big. Like, it's probably... I think it's 17 or 18 inches across, but it's super thin.
Oh, okay.
Incredibly thin. Because I was next to my friend who was doing it kind of quickly, and I was trying to keep up with him, and then I just blew by him. I probably did it in under 10 minutes. Like, I just knocked it out, and I was stacking one on top of the other and eating two.
Okay.
It was super easy. We all completed it. One of my friends who was in from LA wasn't going to do it. He was just going to eat half a pizza and then eat the other half in the morning, and then he just kind of slowly picking at the pizza and then just finished it. But we all got the t-shirts. That's like the number 238th shirt in the history of Pete and Elda's. So, like, they have, like, these redesigns. So for Thanksgiving weekend, I guess, or whatever, turkey's on them. And so it's kind of like turkey's doing whatever. And the shirt is comically large. Like, it's an XL or something shirt. So it's, like, it's big on all of us. You know, it's a free shirt. Like, for $17, you get a lot of pizza, and you get a t-shirt. Like, it's a good deal. And we all had a bonding moment from
that.
That's fun.
So that was fun. Plus, you get this cool t-shirt. Yeah.
We hung out a little bit. We went out for drinks. Like, we went out what was going to be dinner, and then none of us ate because we just eaten a whole bunch of pizza. So we just had a drink.
Yeah.
On Saturday, I saw two movies. I saw the Mr. Rogers movie, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, which was... good, but I didn't love it, and I'm going to have to watch it again
really?
For Hanks of the Memories.
Well, I'm a big Mr. Rogers fan, and I have a little bit of a Pittsburgh note for this movie tonight, too.
Oh, okay. Very cool. We will get to that. I watched Mr. Rogers when I was little, but I don't think I grew up on Mr. Rogers, so like the documentary, which I think is better than this, and this movie didn't tug on my child heart. You know what I mean? It's not like the kind of movie.
Yeah, it would hit hard for me. Like, my mom actually like knew Mr. Rogers
Ooh.
When she worked at the bank.
Fred.
Yeah, she would like talk to him. Everybody around Pittsburgh obviously has like cool Mr. Rogers stories of like, you know, their favorite time meeting him
sure.
and all this stuff, because he was like a real guy. He shot the show in the studio next to my high school.
Oh, very
Remember?
Cool.
Didn't I show you that?
I think
like,
so, probably.
Central's right there. The building next to it is like right where he was like recording all the episodes.
Very cool. So I saw that, and then I saw Queen and Slim, which I think a while ago you said is going to be my favorite movie of the year. Like, this seems like the kind of movie that Joey's going to love. And it was good, but it kind of fell short of what I was sort of hoping for, and that seems to kind of be the reception to a lot of, like, I think nobody's saying it's a bad movie, and I think it's an important movie, but I think that in terms of what it's trying to get across, police brutality against, you know,
yes.
black people and whatever,
minorities.
It doesn't exactly go as far as it maybe could or should. It's still a good movie. I enjoyed it, but, you know, it's not necessarily the kind of movie you run out and go see.
I was like, that's going to be a VOD for me, right?
Yep.
Like, that's, I don't know if you saw, like, the preview, probably not, but, like, the trailers for it were, like, very, like, Oscar baity. Like, they made it look like it was, like, Moonlight or something.
Well, I think that it's trying, like, it's trying to be that kind of thing. And, like, Demi Adejuyibe, who is a comedian and a writer who I really like, has said it's, like, he dubbed it like the blackest movie of the year, which is probably true.
Oh, interesting.
But it's not,
okay.
I don't want to undercut its importance, but at the same time, it's not Moonlight. Like, Moonlight, I think, touched on a lot of issues.
Yes.
I think it touched on race,
yeah.
touched on sexuality, touched on the intersection of both of those, you know, coming of age, all that sort of stuff. This is a very sort of specific, tight time frame that frames a real issue in a very specific fictionalized version. I'm seeing a couple more movies this week. I will talk about those next week. My bummer, kind of, is that Honey Boy, the new Shia LaBeouf movie where he plays his dad. Do you know about this movie?
No.
So he wrote, I think he wrote this movie. It's like an autobiographical movie where he basically plays his dad because he and his dad don't get along. And I don't know much more than that. But it's a movie called Honey Boy, and it's getting great reviews. I didn't realize until like Saturday or Sunday that it's in one AMC theater near me. And so I was going to go on Thursday or Friday. It's out of theaters already on Friday. And like, this is the first, like, you know how I always talk about, and we've talked about it on here.
If a movie's around,
yes.
yeah.
Like, see smaller movies first. But like, I didn't realize it for a couple days. And then I was like, I'll have at least one more. Like, I can see it on the weekend or whatever.
At least two weekends, yeah.
But Thursday, the last day in the first week it's open, it's only showing at 2 and 4 p.m. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, it's terrible.
So it's done.
So it's done. So I am going instead, because I have the AMC pass, but I'm going to another theater, an indie by me, because It's basically leaving New Jersey on Thursday. Wow. So I'm going to a different theater.
So it must have really flopped hard.
I don't think it flopped. I think it just didn't get a push. Like, this must have been like a small run to maybe get Oscar qualification or whatever. I don't know. I don't understand. Okay. I think it's an Amazon movie. It might be on Amazon sooner rather than later, but like, I want to see it. I want to make sure I see it this year because I think I'm going to really like it. I love Shia. We did the podcast about Shia.
Obviously, yeah.
And it's just a bummer. So like, if Honey Boy is around you, I can't vouch for its quality, but if you want to support an indie movie.
Out of theaters by now.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just it's a bummer, man. But whatever. I have a correction to make that I did not know was a correction that needed to be made. And okay. I want to, we did a shared thing today that is not going to come to fruition, I guess, for a couple months. But you and I just recorded an episode.
Oh, yeah.
I like you say what, like you don't know what I'm talking about.
I didn't. I really didn't know where you were going with this. Like, a shared thing could have been like you shared something on social media and then was like, oh, it's like an edit now.
Just hours ago. This is not our first podcast of the day. Mere hours ago, you and I recorded an episode of the Rocky Maivia Picture Show with Nate Milton, who emailed into the show. We talked about Fast Five. It was a lot of fun.
It was so much fun. He's a great dude, like I said. One, he has an awesome voice.
Yep.
Two, he's hilarious. He's right up your alley. I think you guys will like the episode. He obviously is doing a podcast about The Rock.
Yep.
He's a big wrestling fan. It's on the Wrestling Podcast Network. So we talk a little bit more about The Rock being a wrestler. We talk about the Fastiverse. He's very knowledgeable about The Rock. So he's a good dude.
And he's going to be on our show. I hope we can find the time next lap sometime. I hope we schedules align. This episode will come out in February, so we will remind you as it gets closer.
Time.
It's a lot of the things I think we've talked about on this show with a little bit of a new perspective, and also kind of focused. Like it's sort of what we did, Joe, for Fate of the Furious on Watch the Throne, where we just like looked at it through one character's lens, right? Like we talked
exactly
about other characters and family in the movie as a whole. But a lot of it was about what specifically The Rock brought to Fast Five when he was added to the franchise, what the Hobbs character is all about. And so if you really love that, I think, especially, you know, we just did a couple episodes, 5 and 6, where he's the big draw. It was a cool episode. I had a lot of fun.
I had a lot of fun. If we ever get to doing a Rock lap, we're going to have Mr. Nate on for a bunch of episodes.
Surely.
Here, huh?
And we'll also need to pick his brain as to which ones we should do, because he was naming movies that like I'd heard of, but I'd never seen. And we were like, he's like, what do you guys think about this movie? I was like, I've heard of it. And we're like, we've never seen it, but we know it exists. The correction that must be made. Listener to the podcast and past guest, Christian Larson, messaged me on Facebook today. He's like, I just want to let you know. And he's like, you don't have to say this on the podcast. I was like, no. You brought it up.
Going.
I'm going to talk about it. But remember at the beginning of last episode, when I was talking about Brian's wedding and Kyle at the wedding saying cageclub.me, that's cageclub.me, and I gave the credit to Chris Podcast on Now and Again. Larson said he was the one on Monkey Club, which he did with Chris Podcasts, where he did cageclub.me because he thought, which is exactly what I thought Chris's mindset was, that people wouldn't realize that the .me was a top-level domain, and so he spelled it out. But it makes sense now that Chris got it from Larson, but I don't remember Larson saying it, so I want to, on the record, apologize to Larson.
Mr. Christian Larson, sorry.
I was so rude to have taken that away from you. If you want to know who was the first person to spell the word me, M-E, Mr. Christian Larson.
And we were just talking about Larson. I hope he listens and comes up and visits when you come to go see the archive.
For sure.
It's like a store right up his alley.
Yeah.
I was thinking about him while I was there. I was like, you guys could have so much fun here. They kind of focus in horror, too. You know what I mean? Like old campy horror, like weird horror, rare horror. So
I mean, it makes sense that Vinegar Syndrome would pick that kind of place to do it at. But it's weird that that there's two
exists.
Locations in Bridgeport, unless they're both like owned by the same or started by the same person or whatever.
What?
You know what I mean?
What do you mean?
The fact that like Bridgeport's not like a thriving metropolis to have two like different companies, Vinegar Syndrome and the Pop-Up, right?
I really feel like the dudes that own this
store, they own the same thing?
Yeah. I can't confirm that, but it really seemed like it was their store, and that's just like the upstairs of their store.
Yeah. So we have a Patreon page here on the show, patreon.com/TooFastTooForever. Shout out to Cassie Wilson, Jake Freer, Ben Milliman, Nick Burris, and Alex Ellenin for supporting us over there. Thank you all so very much.
Thank you, guys.
If you want to be a patron of ours and get voting rights into the next lap and also learn what the next two lap themes are.
And be part of the toy drive.
So we cashed out the Patreon funds today, so we're going to put that toward the toy drive. If you are donating any toys to Toys for Tots or anything like that, send us a picture to family@caseclub.me.
Social media.
And we will put it out there.
We're going to try to get everybody to kick some toys to some Fast and Furious toys.
Yes, as we drift you a Merry Christmas.
As we drift you a Merry Christmas, yeah.
And if you also want to know the next two lap themes, if you want to have access to the Fast and Furious Minute document, if you want early access to the episodes, if you want merch and swag and our undying love and affection, toofasttoforever.com. We also have an email address here on the show, family@cageclub.mainshow. I've been telling you all week that we didn't have a lot of emails, so it's going to be a short episode. So all of a sudden, we're up to 7 emails. 5 of those came in today. But I think they're all, for the most part, shorties. So let's go through them.
Cool.
First up, we heard from her a couple times last week. Superfan Jenny McMullen sending an email. Lee Iacocca.
Ooh, Lee Iacocca.
Hi, guys. Sitting in the grocery store parking lot for this one. Again, setting the scene beautifully.
I love it.
You guys are just too young to remember Lee Iacocca. After his famous rise to the top of Ford, he was the CEO of Chrysler in the 80s, starred in their commercials, and wrote a best-selling autobiography and a couple other books. He passed away this year, which maybe that's why I know why he's fresh in the brain, maybe.
His name.
She says, now you know, and I can go shopping. Shopping cart emoji, smile emoji, later, Jenny.
Thank you, Jenny, for letting us know. I just knew his name. Like, I couldn't imagine. Like, if you had to, like, get me, be like, one fact about Lee Iacocca, like, I would have had nothing to say.
So she also sent in here two screenshots. It looks like maybe an obituary from CNN. A fact in here is that he was named president of Ford in 1970, but he was fired by the Deuce in 1978.
Oh.
So then he hired by Chrysler Corp in 78, became the company's CEO in 79. He's credited with saving them from bankruptcy.
Oh, that's very cool.
So thank you, Jenny, for writing in about that. It was a name, like, I still don't know if that's why I know him, but I definitely knew the name before Ford v. Ferrari. I just still don't really know why.
Know why.
Other than he's just famous, and I would just know it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The next email that we have is from West Hampton. It is a subject line, one for Dude, What's My Car? And so he writes in here, he just says, Happy Thanksgiving. First of all, so happy Thanksgiving to you,
too,
Wes.
Happy Thanksgiving, Wes. And Jenny, too.
And Jenny, too. And everybody, all of our listeners, all of our dear, sweet listeners.
All of our listeners.
There's nothing I'm going to read in this, because I'm going to read what he wrote next episode.
At the car game.
Yes.
Fair.
We have now have 3 emails in a row from Alex Ellenin. This is what I was saying today. This is sort of like an unfolding narrative. He's sort of doing like a little investigative journalism as he learned about something and followed up with follow-up facts. So
cool.
First subject line, cue the training montage, boys. It's feudin' time.
It's feudin' time. Okay.
Alex writes, so there I was, just chillaxing at work, when I get a notification from Instagram. A follow request? Oh my! So I tap the screen and the app opens. Name Redacted Podcast has requested to follow you. He says, never heard of it. I think to myself, better investigate. Okay. Quote, the podcast that takes the world's fastest movie and breaks it down one furious minute at a time. Hold the fuck on.
Oh, God.
Who are Ryan and Jason? I check my podcast app and show enough, maybe a Last Dragon reference, there it is. A podcast that's seemingly a direct ripoff of the Fast and Furious Minute. This new podcast, On the Block, is barely 2 months old at the time of this email. I'll do some more research and report back. Their episodes are only about 10 minutes long or so. I'm writing this on the morning of the Fast 6 episode, so looking forward to that this week. Hope everyone had a good Thanksgiving. Alex Ellenin.
Thank you, Alex, for the first email. I think they just are going and requesting followers.
They sure are, because Larson asked me about them today too, and they also follow more people too.
that's one tactic.
It's the same thing that Brian's Canadian rivals, the Teenage Dirtbags, did. They just followed everybody. Like, they're like, they followed Melissa's sister. Like, do you know how many like degrees from Kevin Bacon you have to get to follow like Melissa? Like, it just doesn't. It's just a wild domino chain. But like, if they're following like 800 people today, then the Dirtbags are following like 2,000. Like, I mean, if you want to boost your numbers, it's one way to do it.
I guess, yeah.
So then the follow-up email, Alex says, yeah, it's literally if the Fast and Furious Minute was its own thing. Here's the Apple link. And he sent a link to the podcast that you and I know what it is.
Yep.
Third email, he says, seems they are aware you guys are also doing it. I DM them, and they're just doing it as an excuse to watch the movies.
Well, that's respectable. I mean, we only do this as an excuse to watch the movies, so.
You know, it's weird to me. Like, there's a bunch of Fast and Furious podcasts, right? Like, there are so many
there's
of them.
There's a bunch.
There's some that we don't understand why they still exist. You know, I try to preach neutrality to all of them. Like, I think everybody can do their own thing.
Yeah.
It's confusing.
There's a space for everyone.
It's confusing to me. Like, when we started the Fast and Furious Minute, Wes was like, this is an idea that I've had forever. I always wanted to do this. You guys doing it basically saves me the work. I love it.
Okay.
Which made me happy, because, like, you know, Wes, one of our biggest supporters.
And the Minute thing is not an original idea.
Exactly.
You know, like, a lot of people have done it for a lot of different things. It's not an original idea.
But for another show to do the same thing that we're doing basically within a month or two of us starting that segment, it's like, huh.
I'm there with you, bro.
And just like Forrest Gump said, and that's all I got to say about that.
Amen.
Now, the next two emails are both from Justin Kleinman. Shout out to Justin up north. I saw Justin, I don't know if you follow him on Instagram, but he's got some adorable pictures of he and his kids decorating for Christmas. It was very cute.
Oh, cool. No, I didn't see it. I'm
send him a like, you know, no big deal. I sent him a like, though.
Yeah, send us some love, man.
Subject line of the first email, FF6. I wrote back to him, and I just said, ha 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 ha, this made me laugh out loud. So, okay, perhaps I wrote about this long ago, but it always bugs me. They hatched this whole elaborate plan, Brian to go back to the U.S. and sneak into jail. He's got a 24-hour window, the stakes are high. For God's sake, he could have easily been murdered by Braga's henchmen. But alas, he prevails and returns to Europe.
Okay.
Upon arrival, he immediately goes to tell Dom what happened, and without being able to say a word, Dom cuts him off and says something like, whatever happened there was for you. What the hell? Why go there at all if it didn't matter to anyone?
Fair point.
Like, it reminds me of in The Matrix, right? When Neo goes to the Oracle.
Yes.
The Oracle's like, you know, I don't know, next life or whatever. It's not. And then he goes back to Morpheus. He's like, you know, she said, and he's like, that doesn't, that's for you and for you alone. Like, Morpheus is saying that because, like, it literally, like, it does not matter to him. Like, he knows what his destiny is. Here, it's like, hey, go to America. We need this information. He comes back. He's like, hey, I got the information. He's just like, no, we're good. It's like, wait, what?
I think that they're, like, kind of biting the Matrix moment now that you said that about it. Because it, like, lends some gravity to it. And it's way more serious if Dom's like, that was for you. Than it is if he's like, hey, I got the information. Yeah, it's weird, though.
It's very weird. Yeah. It's very, very weird.
Very weird.
Second email from Justin Kleinman. Subject line, oh, yeah, I forgot. Any news on the online viewing party? We kind of dropped the ball on that. I don't remember why.
Rabbit stopped. And now they're this new thing that you have to, like, download an app for. We were waiting till we got back to one so we could try it for one again, right? That's what I thought the plan was.
I think so. So Fast and Furious, the first one, the Fast and the Furious, 2001.
Yes.
The one that we are blowing through in a minute. We are going to do that one on 2/25/20. So we will probably record that around 2/18/20. So yes. So okay.
Yeah, we need to try out the new app because Joey and I tried out Rabbit and we were like, oh, cool, this works. And then like the next month, like right before we were about to do it, they were just like, nope, you got bought out.
Yeah.
Like we're not a real thing anymore.
I don't want to say that we're lazy because we're not lazy. I know that we're not lazy, but like we were lazy-ish with Rabbit because we're like, oh, it exists. We'll just get to it when we get to it. No big deal.
Yeah, we're like, let's line it up. Let's pick the
movie.
We
finally do it within like 2 weeks. They're like, nope, done. And like it had been around for at least months before that, like months and months and months.
Yeah.
I'm kind of scared. I'm kind of shook a little bit, but.
Yeah, it's like they kind of like, they like felt us. I mean, also, but we talked about it. Like that thing shouldn't fucking exist. And I don't know how it did for as long as it did. But apparently there's like a new thing. This one seems to be more like a screen sharing kind of app.
We'll find out. But yeah, in February, we will watch the first movie for the kickoff of Lap 6, which if you're a patron, you know what the theme is, and I will not say any further.
We didn't forget about it. We like this idea, but they kind of shut down on us.
Yes. That's all the emails, so thank you all for sending in the emails. If you want to email
those
in...
Oh, quick, though.
It was cool. Like
emails.
I love a high number and also a lot of quick in and out. Like, I loved Alex, like, every... Like, it was basically, like, three emails over, like, an hour and a half. It was just like, wait, here's a little bit more... Wait, here's a little... All right, we're good.
I can't wait to go tell everybody else that messaged me about it.
They probably just followed everybody that we follow, maybe?
Maybe? I don't know. Write in if you know why you followed us.
Also.
And all of our followers.
Also, I don't think that you would. You're like a sneak lying in tall grass. But if you do a Fast and Furious podcast and you listen to the show, email us, family@cageclub.me. Let us know you're out there.
Say hi.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't even have to read it. Tell us to go fuck ourselves. Make a fake email. Who cares?
Totally fine. If you also want to, in the meantime, leave us a review. This is also opening up the floodgates to possible tampering by other podcasts. But if you want to leave us a review on iTunes, give us 5 stars, rate, review, subscribe. 17 ratings, all 5 stars. No new reviews, but thank you all who have written in, who have reviewed us, who have given us a 5-star rating. We really, truly appreciate it. All right, Joe, the last thing we have to do before we take a break and talk about Into the Blue is talk about the Fast and the Furious minute 25, a minute that we did not have named, but I have since named Drive, in parentheses, 2011, directed by Nicholas Winding Refn.
I was going to say, like, the Buster to the Rescue.
Ooh.
Or just the Garage.
It's tough, and we will play the audio for the minute, and you'll hear why now. I don't want to say that nothing happens in this minute, because we've had minutes where less has happened than this. But
yes, that's true. That's true.
There's not a lot that happens here, at least in terms of what we cover.
It's an awkward minute selection.
Yes, where it starts, where it ends. Like, it makes sense that, like, the scramble, like, everybody's leaving at the end of the previous minute, and, like, this minute kind of ends with Dom getting picked up by Brian, so, like, it makes sense there. There's sometimes, you know, like, a TV episode's like a filler episode where they're just like, we need to, like, advance the plot, and, like, we, or whatever.
Yeah, we need to get from here to here.
Yep.
And they just do
and
it.
That's one of these minutes where Dom goes into the parking garage, puts on his jacket, which is why I was thinking I called it Drive, because at the beginning of Drive, when Gosling is driving, when the driver is driving, and he pulls into the Clippers game and then puts the jacket on, or reverses the jacket, and walks
into
out.
Into a garage, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's a similar thing where it's just like, let me put my car in a place I can get it later, change my appearance. He does that, walks away.
I have a question for you.
Cop pulls a U-turn, Dom runs, Brian gets picked up. What's up?
Did you notice that this parking garage has no intro or exit? It's just full entry.
Which is amazing, considering this is Los Angeles.
It's in LA.
And it's wildly expensive to park there, probably. And
this is just a totally free garage. You just pull up. No parking tickets.
But, I mean, maybe we just don't see. Maybe they do some creative editing. Like, he pulls in, stops, pushes the button, waits, gets the ticket. Cut to him flying.
That's the part of the movie I would want to see, right?
Yeah.
Like, I want to know, like, what the garage arm is, what company it's from, what kind of ticket he gets.
I wonder if anybody has ever Tokyo drifted in real life through one of those. Like, I don't know how you have to time it so well. I don't know if you could.
They definitely have.
Yeah, but yeah, almost
definitely
certainly
have.
I have a question for you, and I don't remember. Do we ever see this car of Dom's again?
Yeah, because I think it's the one he uses for Race Wars and, like, other things, too.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Two notable things, because I wanted to see if these actually had happened before, and I looked in our extensive Fast and Furious Minute document, which is 45 pages long right now.
Holy fuck.
I add page breaks after each thing, so it's not exactly 45 pages, but there's...
But it's long.
It's 45 pages.
And it's spaced and, like, well-organized, so yeah.
This is the second time the name Toretto is spoken aloud in this movie. We have Toretto's Market and Cafe, obviously, but Brian at one point tells Harry, I think, I'm waiting for Toretto. Because, like, I think we're to assume, by Dom being in the back room, that this is Toretto of Toretto's Market and Cafe, but we don't really ever have confirmation. But then, you know, Brian says to Harry,
he could just be, like, the manager of Toretto's Market and Cafe. Like, he doesn't need to be Toretto.
And that's who Charlize is asking to see with her haircut from Fast and Furious 9.
Yeah.
Brian had said one other point, Toretto, so we knew that Dom's last name was Toretto. Because I'm still wondering, because it's the kind of thing where I think we kind of take for granted character names and everything like that.
Yeah.
If we followed that other podcast that breaks it down minute by minute, they don't know, like, they don't say characters' names, I don't think, until they know the characters' names. You know what I mean? So it's an interesting...
Yeah.
We're sort of blessed with the gift of hindsight, sort of. And the other thing is that the car that you said he's going to use again for Race Wars, there's at least the third time that we've seen a close-up, the third minute at least, that we've seen a close-up of his license plate, because
yes.
I was like, is this new information? And no, it is not. But what did you spot here, sign-wise, car-wise? Dom's car, like I said, we've seen a couple times, but there's at least one new car here.
There's one new car. It's the cop car. It has a different license plate than the last cop car. This one's 7689345, which is kind of an interesting number because it's like 3 through 9, right? But also 689 is my birthday, and that's like whenever I see a 689 together, I'm like, oh, wow, really cool.
Why is 6 afraid of 7? Because 689.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't quite work, but you know.
One thing and then one silly thing. The cop U-turns at Cambria Street.
Okay.
That's where that's the street sign I got from this time.
It's also the font that we use in the minute document.
Dom, when he puts his jacket on, he's like walking by outside. The only sign that I could like distinguish is a sign that said Maria, and then it had an arrow. And I'm going to describe it to
this
you.
This is a crazy font. I've never seen this symbol before.
What? That's like the refresh symbol.
I know, but like I've never seen it in a Google Doc.
Oh, yeah. So I went to find an emoji for an arrow that goes, okay, follow me here visually. I'm going to mentally describe it to you, okay?
Yep.
It starts from the right, it goes left, and then turns up and points completely vertical.
So it starts at 3 o'clock. It's like if a clock was at 3 o'clock?
It starts at 3 o'clock and goes to 12.
Yeah, okay.
Okay? And the arrow's on the top of the 12.
Yep.
That emoji does not exist.
Huh.
There's a million variations of like, you know, like starts at the top, goes around, starts at the bottom, goes up. The refresh symbol is like the closest thing I could find to describe that. But I looked up arrow emojis to add the emoji to this document, and that one, just specifically that one, doesn't exist. It's so strange.
Well, that is
either one.
Yeah, I'm looking now at the emojis. There's a lot. There's a lot of arrows too.
There's a ton. There's like 100.
And there's also this guy, which is like the reverse.
Yes. Yes. So if you mirrored that, that's what I'm talking about.
Right. But that one doesn't exist.
Nope. Told you. How weird is that, right?
Super weird.
So if you're looking, if you're ever looking for an emoji that means go around the left of something and then straight, it doesn't exist.
Nope. Man, there are complicated arrow emojis too, and this one just does not
exist.
That's what
I'm saying. Yeah. I had a really hard time, and I was like, this is very strange. We discovered a new fact today.
In terms of music, the song Ditch the Fuzz ends, and Brian Saves Dominic begins. They're both by BT. There's the one, there's the best YouTube video that I keep linking to in the document, that there's the entire score by BT, mm-hmm. by Brian Transeau, on YouTube. So I just keep linking there. So that's a very cool thing to listen to if you want to get psyched up, get jazzed up while you're, after you finish listening to the podcast, if you want to listen to the Fast and Furious score, go do that. And the only other thing is the trivia question. There's not a lot to add. Like, I literally cannot think of another question that isn't just like, what does this sign say about this minute, other than what color is Dom's jacket?
What color is Dom's jacket, or where does Dom park above?
Which would be the Union swap meet?
Yeah.
But again, like, that's, like, I want to...
It's super, I know.
Like, it's difficult, and I don't want to have everything just be, like, a sign. You know what I mean? Because, like, I think last time we just did a sign.
I think Dom's jacket's a good one, and it's in another minute. It's, like, in, you know what I mean? He wears it back to the party and stuff. So it's on for a while. That's a better one. I think that's more fair.
So we have black, red, brown, or he isn't wearing a jacket. And, of course, it's brown. He's got a couple of black stripes, armband kind of stripes around his...
Yeah.
Thin stripes around on his left arm, at least. Anything else to say about the Fast and Furious minute before we take a break and come back to talk about Into the Blue?
No, I think that that's all that I had to say. I actually think we did better than what the minute gave us, to be honest.
We are getting very close to Johnny Tran.
Yes.
We are getting very close to, ostensibly,
the party.
Dom's other sister, Ellie Toretto.
Yeah, we are.
And the party, like you said, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we're getting there. It's just a matter
we're
of...
We're getting to the main parts real soon.
But let us take a quick break, and then we'll come back with another word from our sponsor.
Number 60, Into the Blue Eyes of Paul Walker. This episode is brought to you by Stuart Cove's Dive Bahamas. Their two-tank shark diving adventure trips begin with their first dive with the sharks along a magnificent wall where they swim calmly along with the divers in a non-feeding environment. The second dive is on a large sand patch where the group kneels down in a semicircle and watches our dive master feed the sharks off of a long pole.
Is the dive master Jessica Alba and Paul Walker? Because they are both not terrified at all of sharks.
I think it's Jessica Alba. I think she's the dive master.
Very, very cool.
Because Paul Walker even seems like a buster at diving, doesn't he?
This might be kind of a condemnation of his acting ability, but he's, again, kind of Brian O'Connor here. Sort of.
He's Brian O'Connor, yeah.
So this movie won, like I said before, it won our poll. Pick a Paul Walker movie for us to watch. It beat out Joyride, Running Scared, and Varsity Blues. If you want to hear people talk about Varsity Blues, Brian Rodriguez covered it over in High School Slumber Party.
Oh, cool.
So go, nice. Go do that thing. Fitting it in, I think, to the Fast and Furious timeline, because once again, every note I took about the Paul Walker
Always.
Character, I don't even
Same.
Know what his character's name is. Just wrote down Brian. That's all I wrote.
Was it like Kyle?
I have no idea. I honestly, if you gave me four choices, like I would have no idea.
I think it was Kyle.
Into the Blue, his name is Jared. So you had, your first letter was almost kind of right.
Yeah, okay. Was there somebody named Jared Kyle? That's kind of the same name.
Scott Conn's name was Bryce.
Yeah, see, these are all like very white boy names.
Douche bro
right?
names, yeah. Oh, so this is interesting. So the director of this film, John Stockwell, directed a film, the only other one of his movies that I've seen. Well, he directed Blue Crush, which I have not seen, which is another surfing movie.
Oh,
another
yeah,
water
that's
movie.
Right.
Sort of important to the mythology of this show. He directed In the Blood, which is the bad Gina Carano movie that I saw. So
oh, nice.
I always talk about Haywire and how you should see Haywire. I'm like, but whatever you do, don't see In the Blood. John Stockwell also directed that. So if you're listening, I am so sorry.
We're sorry that you're mentioning another movie that he directed that you don't like.
In terms of names, Jessica Alba as Sam and Ashley Scott as Amanda, if you had given me like a list of those, I would have, like, I knew the girls' names. The guys, I don't know if they just don't say the guys' names or I just don't care because they're Brian and Scott Conn to me. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But Sam and Amanda both sound like, especially Amanda, but the other, like the guys' names,
Well, they make a
you.
Big deal about her being Amanda when they introduce her, right? So, like, I would have gotten Amanda, too. Sam, maybe. Who is Scott Conn to you?
Scott Conn is... I think he's in the Ocean's movies.
He is. But you know who he really is?
Oh, he's in Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yes.
Right.
So car adjacent as well.
And also another one of your favorite movies, Boiler Room.
Yeah. He's the one that's like totally fine with them being scumbags. I don't really ask questions about how we're making all this money. And he's like, you don't want to know? He's like, nope, less I know the better.
And in a movie related to Gone in 60 Seconds, because it was directed by Mr. Nicolas Cage, the only movie he's ever directed, a movie called Sonny, which is about James Franco as a male prostitute in New Orleans. So very,
very interesting.
Cool. All right. I just mentioned Brian Rodriguez, who covered Varsity Blues. One thing that he does on High School Summer Party is that he reads the back of the VHS cover to let people know. So I just found, because there's not a lot of movies I don't think we can do that are sort of VHS era, but here's the back of the VHS for what Into the Blue is about, okay? Red hot action superstars Paul Walker and Jessica Alba heat up the screen as two sexy young divers.
From?
So she, Sin City came out before this.
Okay, I guess that's, yeah.
Dark Angel was in the 90s. I don't know what else. I couldn't tell you. Let's see here. Jessica Alba.
Fair.
Fantastic Four was before this, a year before this.
Okay.
Well, same year,
okay,
at least. Okay. So the VHS would have come out after that came out. So she's, I think it's safe to call her an, you know, if you could ever call Jessica Alba an action star, now is the
time
to do it.
Now's the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Heat up the screen as two sexy young divers who dream of finding hidden treasure when they take some friends, Scott Conn and Ashley Scott, their celebrity couple name, Ashley Scott Conn, on an extreme sport adventure. The last thing they expect to see below the shark-infested waters is a legendary pirate ship, rumored to contain millions of dollars in gold. But their incredible good fortune is short-lived, as a ruthless gang of deadly criminals gets word of what they have uncovered. The discovery of a lifetime could just cost the treasure hunters their lives in this exciting new thriller from the director of Blue Crush.
That kind of skimps over the drug aspect of the movie.
It also, well, it doesn't really skip over as much as, like, criminals get word. It's like, yeah, because Scott Conn tried to take the drugs and sell them to get the money to get the ship
back to the criminals.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's all like, it's all Scott. Like, this entire movie is Scott Conn's fault. Like, everything bad that happens is his fault because he's greedy.
Well, I would argue that it's all Amanda's fault, but
for
it's
the record,
his fault.
Shark bites her in the ass. She bleeds out and dies in the emergency room.
And she was like a character that needed to die.
Yes. But then,
right at the time she did. I was very happy with this death.
They're in a Jeep or whatever going back to the house, and it's Paul Walker and Jessica Alba and Scott Conn. And Scott Conn's just like, all right, cool, so she's out of things. And Jessica Alba's like, she just died. He's like, yeah, I met her 5 days ago. It's like, well, like, yeah, but also, he's like, I'm a terrible person. Like, you should know that by now. But also, I don't know what narrative benefit it served for her to just be like a random person that he met. You know, like, I don't understand why she was so
removed.
It
could have
easily
been his girlfriend of, like, 2 months, 3 months.
Because she could be the exact same character. What does this do?
It just makes him get to accentuate his scumbagness. And you know what? In that moment, I never related more to a scumbag character in a movie. When he's like, okay, she's dead now. Cool. Let's finish this off. And they're like, she just died. He's like, I don't know that girl. Like, she's just a random cokehead. Did you see her freak out and almost fuck that dude in the club? Like, I'm glad she's eaten too, brother.
So I was saying to you that the movie's an hour and 50 minutes long.
Yes.
It really should have been, like, it's not like a thing where it's like, this is, like,
fluff. It doesn't feel like there's a lot of fluff.
But it also should be a lot tighter. And I think the problem is that it doesn't feel like there's a lot of fluff because it kind of is all fluff, sort of. There's not really plot for a while. Like, it's just like beautiful people snorkeling, which I think is how you sell the movie. And then they find coke, and then the coke goes away, and then they find the dagger, and the dagger, they're like, we need to figure out how to get more of the dagger.
Find like the coke and the dagger like right at the same time.
And then there's just a lot where they're like, how do we get money?
And obviously you would just bring up 2 bricks of this coke and be like, I'm gonna trade this for a boat.
Well, that's
like,
what Scott Conn tries to do.
I know, but you should have done this weeks ago. I mean, like, well, days, you know, hours ago.
What it turns out is that everybody on this island is corrupt.
Yeah, and you knew this. This is the Bahamas. Like, that's how it works. We all know about Fire Festival and, like, exactly what happened. What needed to happen was, is, like, you needed to go to the dude with the boat, unpack the cocaine. Don't deliver it in the bricks that it arrives in. You unpack it, you're like, hey, I got this bag of cocaine that I found, and you just dump it into a random Ziploc, and you're like, here's your bag of cocaine. They would have solved all of these problems if you wouldn't have brought them, like, bright red bricks of cocaine with, like, yellow tape around the outside. It's like, that's very distinct. I would know that that's my cocaine.
Yeah, it's like, you might as well just stamp it with, like, his you know,
his initials.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Something.
But, like, what the weirdest thing about this movie is that very early on, Josh Brolin on his big-ass boat pulls up next to Paul Walker on his little beat-up, you know, hoopty of a boat, and he's just like, hey, man, like, good to see you. Boat's coming together, blah, blah, blah. And he leaves for like an hour.
Because he was his old boss. Paul Walker's a treasure hunter.
Yep.
Brian O'Connor, he's a treasure hunter.
Yep.
And although he has Jessica Alba, they don't really make a lot of money because he's a treasure hunter. And they mostly just, like, dive and hang out.
Which, I mean, to be honest, I would too in that situation. Why not?
What else do you need besides an island and Jessica Alba? I don't think there's anything else I could want for her. And she's, like, doting over him, too.
But also, there is a good point in this movie because, like, Paul Walker's kind of a buster in this movie. He's not. He's sort of like a, you know, he lives in a trailer. He's got a dumpy boat. He doesn't have a lot going for him. He, like, kind of works part-time at seems. And Scott Conn's like, you think a girl like Sam is going to stick around if you don't get your act together? And like, that's kind of the pushy sort of kind of needs.
But they're like living like Temptation Island over here. Like, we just need our love. Like, we'll survive on love type thing. I mean, if Jessica Alba was telling me that, I would believe her too.
And I do feel like I was surprised. I don't know why I was surprised, but I was surprised when like in the first 5 minutes, she shows up at his boat and they kiss. I was like, oh, it almost felt like they should have been the new couple. That Scott Conn and his girlfriend should have been like this, like, you know, long running
thing.
Or they
could have like switched. Like, she came with Scott Conn and Brian had the shitty girlfriend and they kind of like find each other in the middle.
Like, I don't know why I thought that they were going to like have like a meet cute in here, but the fact that they were already dating from the start of the movie, I was just like, that's all right. The reason this movie gets mean, the reason that this movie gets, and I looked it up, a $50 million budget is because you have beautiful Paul Walker and beautiful Jessica Alba making out and swimming in bathing suits and just being fun and flirty.
Shirtless and gorgeous the whole time.
Where the movie kind of errs is that it tries to get too serious. I don't know what the movie could have been or should have been, but I feel like a more lighthearted kind of romp. Like, don't make it like a weird sort of forced
thriller.
Like, if this
was like Game Night, like it was like Rachel McAdams and like Paul Walker being like, damn, that's not cocaine.
Yes.
Like, or you know what I mean? Like, bloop, bloop, bloop. And like, they like pull up the dagger and the dagger's made of cocaine or something. And they're like, this was a cocaine boat.
But like, just the fact that like they try to ham fist in this thriller. Josh Brolin is the bad guy, but like he's the bad guy just because like we don't know anybody else. We haven't been introduced to anybody else. So like when.
Well, they introduce a bad guy.
An hour and I was just like, is he. Wait, is he the bad... I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, why would he be the bad guy? And then, like, he reveals he's the bad guy. And then, like, we find out that, like, their cop friend is also crooked, or at least, you know, being forced into,
partially
like, working
crooked
for them. I guess just because we don't know anybody else, but, like, why is this happening?
I would assume that the guy in the club was, like, the ultimate bad guy, but he was just, like, one tier. Like, he was three steps removed from the real bad guy. So the movie starts out, I want to go over some Brian moments.
Let's fit this in, because in my mind, there's a very clear way that this ties into the Fastiverse, and a very clear time in the timeline when this fits in. So I want to see if you have the same...
interesting.
I think you probably do.
No, I don't think so. I have some Brian moments that I noticed. Brian is a diving instructor,
yeah,
right? And he leaves, like, a fat guy down there because that's funny, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't laugh at it. I'm laughing at the idea.
No,
that
no,
this
I agree.
Like...
I'm laughing at your description of like, I guess that's what the movie's doing. I don't know.
And the guy's like, you got him down there? Like, you bring him back. And he's like, I only get him down there. And he's like, you threw the weight belt. I'm going to take it out of your paycheck. And then Brian just throws his boss off a boat. And I was like, that's a pretty Brian move.
I wrote down, that's so Brian.
That's so Brian. Like, to take your boss, like, you do your job half-assed, and then your boss is like, don't do your half-assed job. And he's like, yeah, get off the boat.
And just like Stasiak, like, physical aggression toward his superiors.
Very strange.
Yeah.
Him and Jessica Alba are driving. He doesn't do a stare and drive.
Nope.
He does a make out and drive.
Which we've seen by both Dom and Letty and Han and Giselle.
Yes, but this one ends almost badly.
Yeah.
He like swerves, almost hits another car. And we're like, the buster's still a buster.
There
like,
was one thing between the two things that you said that I thought,
oh,
another
what?
Brian action. Jessica Alba shows up to his boat. She smells his famous chili and cornbread. And she's like, the last time you made this was when your ex-girlfriend came to the island.
Yes.
And I was just like, is Brian learning to cook like the barbecue? Like, is he get the barbecue itch from Dom? And he's making the it's chili and cornbread. It's not
and
exactly barbecue,
Mia?
But like it's barbecue adjacent, like,
yeah,
buster. All right.
He was thinking about Mia too, that she showed up to the island and shit broke loose. Then we get into like Fastiverse scenes, and this is where I think this is the only reason why Paul Walker agreed to this movie is because they probably let him drive the jet skis.
I don't know if he, because like he didn't drive any boats, I don't think, in Too Fast, but like he's around boats. He probably just drove boats while they were filming it, right? So like he probably had that itch just a couple years earlier.
Yeah, and wasn't he like a big fisherman and stuff? Like, I can see this is one of those things where like, didn't Adam Sandler just get in trouble for like he only does movies of places he wants to take his family on vacation or something?
I don't think he got in trouble, but I think that's like kind of an
open
secret.
They like know it.
But yes.
Yeah, it's like not a secret. He's like, I'll do the movie, but it has to be on a place where I can take my family, and it's a vacation place, and then I'll just like happen to make a movie there on the side. And this is like a very good Brian, like, I'm gonna go deep water fishing, I'm gonna ride jet skis, and I'm just gonna hang out with Jessica Alba in a bathing suit for like a month. The good outweighs the bad. Like, I have to do some acting some days and stuff like that. For the most part, I can get drunk and be beautiful and like be on an island. This would be pretty dope.
And get a sweet tan and just like be fawned over. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so his friend shows up, right? Super douche bro.
Yeah, he's hitting on Jessica Alba in the airport. He's like, you know, if I met
like
you first.
Like slapping her thighs.
Yeah. Like, okay.
Aggressive.
So here's a couple of things about trivia for this. Okay, so.
Please tell me he improv'd it.
No, I don't know about that.
Culling her body tight.
Jessica Alba said she was unhappy with the film, mostly because her character was rewritten during filming, which has got to be frustrating for any actor.
Yeah,
also, this is scummier, and this is skeezier and sleazier, scenes were shot with her stunt double in a bikini behind her back, which meant that she had to spend the majority of the movie without much clothes on. Because they're like, they got all this B-roll about your stunt double, like, you know, in a bikini, and like, you got to be in a bikini to match, too. So, like, just stripped down.
Oh. So they just shot all the B-roll of her stunt double in a bikini, and then were like, now you have to wear a bikini?
That's what the IMDb trivia seemed to imply. And the other thing was that apparently her bikini was, quote, too revealing for trailer, so they had to digitally enhance or add more fabric. There's a lot of this movie where, like, I mean, she's adorable. Like, she's not the world's best actress,
cute.
But I think she's a good actress. She can be really good.
And she's cute.
She's very cute. But, like, this movie, she's just literally an object. Like, when she's talking to Brian, she's brushing her teeth, she's there in her underwear. Just, like, we get, like, why this is happening. But they give her literally anything to do. Like, she's like, guys, I don't want any part of this. I'm going to go. And she, like, leaves for half an hour. Like, I understand that, like, that kind of makes sense for the character. But, like,
I think even she was feeling like she needed to leave for half an hour.
Terrible. Also, to sort of keep it PG-13, so sort of like family friendly, where these teenagers can go and make out to this movie and, like, you know, think about the love of their lives, Paul Walker and Jessica Alba. They had to alter and edit and cut down and cut back a lot of the violence in this movie. So I think this movie was not exactly, like, what we saw, I don't think, was what was originally intended. I think there's a lot of things that sort of shifted and changed.
I don't mind the lack of violence, though. Like, I mean, like, there was, like, there's probably just, like, more, like, random gore of, like, her getting her ass bit off and, like, shark attacks and stuff like that. Maybe, like, another stabbing, more blood.
It gets violent kind of in a hurry toward the end, which is a little strange. Not that this means necessarily anything, but 21% on Rotten Tomatoes, 50%, 57% from audiences. The biggest, the most telling number is that I said a $50 million budget. Worldwide gross, $44 million. So this was a critical...
Almost broke even.
And commercial, but it was still a flop and a failure. You know what I mean? So,
because if you got Jessica Alba and Paul Walker and you're pitching this as a movie where they make out a lot.
And they don't really make out a lot. For I guess for a while, but it's also, it's just a weird tonal shift, I think. This is kind of a fun, good times, happy vibes movie for half of it, and it's like, oh no, like, Scott Kahn's doing bad stuff.
I want to see Jessica Alba and Paul Walker redo this movie. I want the exact same script, I want the exact same actors, but I want it to be directed by Harmony Korine.
I've got some bad news for you.
What?
Paul Walker's no longer living.
Oh,
I don't think this can happen.
But I mean, like, don't you want to see the Spring Breakers version of this?
Well, I think the Spring Breakers version of this is just Spring Breakers. Like, it's that movie. It's where they want to have a good time.
Yeah.
And they get entangled in crime.
Yeah, I think that that's exactly what this is. Like, I want it to be, like, weird and, like, surreal, strange in tone, really pushing weird envelopes with it, right?
I mean, I think that's my biggest problem with the movie is that it's not that it's bad. I mean, it is bad, but it's not that it's bad.
I like it.
It's generic. Like, there's nothing about this that stands out. Like, it's just, it's two handsome people, and that's kind of it. Like, there's nothing about this that it doesn't even try to be anything new, I don't think.
No, it doesn't. Which I respect. Like, it's like,
well,
this
that's a different way of watching a movie, but all right.
It's like, this is a PG-13 movie. You get what you get.
Yeah.
And, like, and I was like, I'm in for it. But I did have some problems with the movie. Scott Kahn comes in. Ultimate douche bro.
Yeah.
Slaps Jessica Alba on the thighs. This body's looking tight.
Yep.
They find the cocaine and the treasure. They go to get the boat, to rent the boat. Scott Kahn, he's the purse strings. He calls, can't get $30,000. Very glazed over plot point. Paul Walker says, like, what do you mean, bro? Like, you're a lawyer. You don't have any money? And he goes, nope. Took a bad beat in Vegas. I'm broke.
Yeah.
You mean to tell me this guy doesn't love cocaine as much as I do?
Well, I think he does.
He does not.
Why not? He's all about keeping that brick.
No, he just wants the brick to get the money to get the treasure.
Well, no, because I think he, because Amanda's saying at first, she's like, let's save it for a rainy day or a rainy month or just or a sunny day. Like, she wants to just do blow. Then I feel like they met in a club under the auspices of, like, let's just get fucked up. Like, I think when he throws the drugs back in the guy's face,
he says to her, like, right after that, he's like, he's trying to keep it because he's thinking of the money of it. And then he says, I think drugs are for lames anyways, when he throws the drugs into the water. And then when they're at the club, she's like, do you want to do a bump of cocaine with me? And he's like, no, drugs are stupid, and throws them back at the drug dealer, and that's how the fight starts.
I thought in that instance it was because he was just pissed off that, like, the girl that he was with, but not really with, like, was getting hit on by this other guy, and he was just like, well, like, fuck this guy. You know what I mean? I thought that was, like, I can sort of excuse that.
I would have buried my face into this, like, you know what I mean? Like, if this was, like, if the option was, like, maybe the Paul Walker, Jessica Alba thing, like, maybe he doesn't do cocaine. If you're, like, a diver that doesn't have any money and you're living on this, like, in a Bahamas island, you'd probably be okay with drugs. Like, you wouldn't say no. Like, you would at least bring one brick up and be like, we're gonna have a sick-ass party tonight. Even if it's just us four on this boat, like, we're gonna have a fun fucking time.
Well, it does feel like Sam is kind of, for lack of a better word, like a buzzkill. And, like, I would be Sam in this case, too. Yes. You know what I mean? It's just like, she's like, let's not, because she's looking at it rationally and functionally, and she knows, like, it seems like they're friends with the cops, they're friends with everybody, and she's like, look, you bring this up, and even, like, we don't do it, like, we're getting 5 years minimum, right? Like, it just...
That's fair.
It's not
yeah.
worth the trouble. It's not worth the risk. We're in paradise. We're all beautiful people. Let's just have a good time. We're on a boat. Let's just do this.
Yeah, but I'd be like, look, I'm going to at least take a quarter of this brick, put in a baggie, and I can chuck the rest into the ocean for you. I don't want all of them. I don't want to sell them. But just, like, this is just a stash for now. And if we need more, we'll come back and get it.
I do like, though, that after Carter Verone, Brian knows better than to fuck with coke. He's just like, nah, man, I'm good.
Exactly.
Because I do think that this movie takes place... I mean, I know that Tokyo Drift is after the fact, but basically in the chronological timeline or whatever, like, basically between 2 and 4, Brian's sort of adrift and going from agency to agency. I feel like he went down to the Bahamas, to the whatever, wherever they
makes
are.
Makes perfect sense.
Just did this for a little bit and then came back. Like, you know, we got... And I think I've confused them before, but we have in the turbocharged prelude between 1 and 2, we got Minka Kelly, and then we've got Jessica Alba in this. Like, I feel like Brian's kind of got a type. Like, he's got that really attractive...
Oh, yeah, he got a
mid-2000s brunette, right? Which is also Jordana Brewster. Like, it's the same...
It's the same build.
Yeah, they're all beautiful, thin brunettes.
If you blank their faces out and just put their bodies in a lineup, they would all pretty much be the same,
yeah.
Right?
Brian's definitely got a type, so I feel like this fits in after Too Fast, before Fast and Furious. Brian goes down, just trying to get his life together. He's like, I don't know, I'll buy a boat. And, like, he buys a shitty boat, he's trying to fix up the boat. Things break bad.
Jessica Alba falls in love.
What's fascinating, though, is that at the end of the movie, when they find all the gold, there's, like, a happy ending, which is also, I want to talk about this ending for forever, because it is bananas to me. Then it's, like, the secret bankrolling that, like, Brian goes back, and he's now, like, a millionaire, and no one knows, he never brings it up. But, like, I think that if this fits in, this is actually Brian, I just like that he's secretly incredibly wealthy. Like, 100, like, 9-digit, 8 zeros, like, he's really, really wealthy.
Yeah, that would be pretty badass. I can't believe that Scott Conn doesn't like cocaine, but I really did like the plot point to put the crashed airplane full of cocaine right next to the actual treasure, because that gives them a sense of, like, urgency that they can't really, like, report that they found the treasure unless they can claim it first, and they know that they need to find the evidence to claim it, and as soon as they claim it, they're gonna have to tell them about finding the plane, right? So, like, they have to make it so that it's like, we got a 12-hour boost one night. They're gonna have to report this to the police and the authorities, like, all at once. That was cool that they have to, like, teeter between the, like, there's cocaine there worth, like, probably, like, $100 million, and then there's gold there probably worth, like, $1 billion, and, like, we're on a crunch here because there's dead people in this plane and we know about it.
It feels like they're trying to weigh between ignorance is bliss and also getting rich quick, but not really, like, not getting really rich quick. Like, it's a strange, like, they want to come across things authentically, right? But they're also, like, there's a line that I feel like is said and then passed by altogether. Brian says something along the lines of, like, if we want to do this legit and if we want to be able to keep this, we have to do X, Y, and Z. And then I feel like that is never, like, he's worried, I think, about making sure that when they rescue the Zephyr with the old ship, they get the finder's fee. But, like, I feel like that's not really addressed. Like, I think they say that line to be like, well, this is kind of like, we could do this legitimately as opposed to the drugs, which is, like, an illegitimate, like, hurting the island, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's the thing. They're in a moral struggle. It's like a very apparent binary moral struggle. It's like easy, quick money, nobody will find out about it. Or like we could do the work and get the treasure, which is awesome and fun. And it's like at the same time, they're right next to each other. So like we got to do this quick.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. But can we talk about the ending? Let's talk about the ending where Amanda is dead.
Amanda's dead because she gets shark eaten. They finally agree at some point to like return all the cocaine, right? And they're like, we need the 30 grand to return the cocaine, which will get them the boat so that they can find the treasure. That's the fairest deal, right? Honestly, if I was out there, my solution to this would have been tell the drug dealers we found your plane. Don't pull up any of the treasure, right? Because it was all like hidden. And so like, look, we got your plane. Give me two divers. Have them come with me. Bring a speedboat. I'll show you where it is. You collect all your cocaine and get the fuck out of here.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like, just let me have the like excavation boat. Like, I'm just going to have fun with this boat for a day. And then as soon as they leave, be like, cool, now we're digging up the shit. And like, you could have gotten rid of it and you would have had no record of it. You call in the plane when you find it, but you know that the shit's already there.
That's the inherent dilemma in this movie, right? So Scott Conn's plan, is basically what you just said. And it's not a bad plan, but like,
I'm not gonna try sell the coke back to them. You show up with like the packing to this brick and you're like, is anybody looking for this? And then they're like, I know exactly who that belongs to. Where did you get this? And you're like, look, sorry dude, I just want to make sure that somebody knew what this was. I know where the rest of it is. I'll take you to it. I don't want it. I'm good, but I'm gonna need some money to rent this boat. Is that a fair finder's fee? Like, obviously I didn't shoot down your plane or anything, and I could take you to where it is. And I think that a drug dealer would be like, 30 grand for $100 million worth of cocaine? Of course I'll do that. And he could bring his own divers and shit. Be like, I'll take you there, like, tonight. I can point it out exactly where it is.
I think the problem is that Brian's just such a goody-two-shoes, right? That, like, he can't abide any kind of moral or ethical or whatever. It's just like, I don't want to even be associating with these criminals.
That's just lame, though. I mean, like, you're just getting to the end goal. Like, you don't need to, like, you're not doing anything morally wrong other than, like, flooding the streets with drugs. But, like, people are going to get drugs
which is
no
a pretty big
what.
Moral dilemma.
No, but, like, people are going to get drugs no matter what. It's not like there's no drugs on the island. Like, that guy still had cocaine. Like, you just lost one shipment of it. Okay, so now he has another shipment of it. Who the fuck cares? Like, they're going to be bringing coke through the island forever and ever. Everybody's corrupt. We know it. Let's just move this along. Would you have a moral dilemma with it?
I mean, you're talking to somebody who wouldn't even bring beer into Hobbs and Shaw. Like, what, you think I'm going to fuck with coke?
Yeah. No, but I mean, like, you just, like, re-deliver it back to the drug dealers that it came from.
I don't know. I think the movie's also manufacturing dilemmas like this, because you can also have the same kind of end result where, like, they get into trouble with the drug dealers, even if everybody's on board, right? Like, even if Paul Walker's on board, them having the issue early on just makes the movie longer.
Yeah.
Because they have to, like, basically get to a point where Scott Conn just does it behind their back. Like, if they had just said, you know, that's not a bad idea, let's just do that. Like, the movie's 20 minutes shorter, they skip the middle chunk, Jessica Alba maybe runs away then instead of later, I don't know. But I feel like just they want to manufacture tension or maybe keep the good times going. I don't know. By saying no early, they're just delaying the kind of inevitable, right?
Yeah. Fair.
Which is not like a good thing. Like, that's just like I guess that's what's happening now. At the end of the movie, Amanda's dead, the other three of them are on the boat, and they're just like, you know, we don't need to be rich. We can just hang out and have a good time here. They're still trying to rescue, like, or bring up this, like,
it's a cannon.
The cannon, yeah, from the boat, from the Zephyr. And they tried to bring this up earlier, and that's when the cops showed up, and that's when Scott Conn got his arm. I thought it was broken because, like, it snapped, but it's just, like, trapped underneath.
Yeah.
But they try to bring it up again, and it falls again. It breaks open, like, what basically looks like sand on the bottom of this ocean, the bottom of the sea or whatever.
But it's the Zephyr, the bottom of the Zephyr. Yeah.
And they find all these gold bars, and it's like, we're rich! Ha ha! We're rich! And then the closing credits say there are more than $6 billion in unclaimed treasure in the oceans, .. waiting to be found. And I was like, wait a minute. Like, is this movie encouraging dumb amateurs just watching this movie to, like, go rent a boat and, like, dive and find like, that feels like it's like the opposite of, like, don't try this at home. It's like, oh, to me it was like, hey kids, you want to get rich quick, go rent a boat and just go scour the ocean floor for treasure.
That's because you're just too reasonable. If the target audience for this is PG-13 and it's kids making out in a movie theater, they're just selling you the dream at the end of the movie. They're just telling you that, yes, really, this could actually happen. Not to go do it.
I feel like they're more impressionable, though. They'd be like, because I'm not going to read that and be like, I'm going to go do it. But
yeah,
I feel
but
like
you're
if you're
like 14, can you go rent a boat and scour the ocean floor? No.
No, but if you're 14, can't. You can write the video game. That's a spoiler. I'm going to cut that out. Never mind. Totally different movie. It felt like the kind of movie where it's all fictional characters, like there's nothing real. It's like, and this is what happened after the movie. And it's like, I don't care where these characters go after the movie. Like, just show me. Like, it's not like they're real people.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like The Irishman, right? Did you watch The Irishman or no?
I don't have 3 hours to commit to this. Like,
hey, man, a lot of people did.
I saw somebody break it down.
Like, it's based on the Jimmy Hoffa thing. Like, everything is pretty much factually correct, right? And so, like, when they show somebody on screen, they're just like, this guy was shot 6 times in the face. This guy was killed and shot. Like, this guy died of old age or whatever. And, like, yeah. That is cool because it actually is what happened. But here, it feels like, and, you know, after this, you know, Brian and Sam, you know, went on and got married. It's like, I don't care. Like, I guess if you love the characters, it's kind of cool, but it feels like that kind of vibe, or just like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? Or
yeah,
not
no,
see
just
that.
Happily Ever After, man. That's it. I like Happily Ever After. That's okay with me.
So did you like this movie?
I did like this movie.
Would you watch it again?
Yeah, I would watch it again.
Okay.
I would watch it again on, like, a Saturday afternoon, like, if it was on TV, and Rachel hasn't seen it, I watch it without her, I would put it on and be like, check this movie out. I don't know if she would like it. She might rage quit it, but, like, I would attempt to put it on for her.
I heard that she was not too fond of Brick Mansions.
She was absolutely not. But, I mean, we were drinking, so, like, who the fuck knows what that means? Like, it could be something. It could be good. It could be bad. Who knows?
I have a couple other fast connections here.
Same.
They have the air tank, which I was like, oh, it's like Nas underwater.
Yeah, he shoots Nas with the tank.
Because that's how they blow up Josh Brolin at the end.
There's a lot of harpoons.
Harpoons, yes, for sure. Similar there. There's also a lot of Roman-esque things going on here.
There is.
So,
like, what were you thinking?
When they're in the club and Amanda's eyeing the high rollers, it feels like the guy is kind of like, he's got the swagger and the bravado of a too fast Roman.
Oh, no, I was thinking that the whole time that Scott Conn is playing his Roman.
Well, that's what I was thinking, because what I was about to say was that when Scott Conn throws the Coke back in the guy's face and punches him, I'm like, that's a very Roman move, too.
Yes, Scott Conn is just white Roman to Paul Walker in this movie. Like, he's the one that's like, come on, man, like, we're gonna do dumb shit. And then he's like, you don't have any money? He's like, well, I thought I did, but, like, I gambled it all. And you're like, god damn it, you should have told me that. Yeah, so I think that he plays his Roman a lot in this movie.
I mean, he's definitely the Roman to Brian's Brian.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, he's the Roman character for sure.
Which I guess is probably a dynamic that we've seen in a lot of movies, the kind of the uptight, and not the uptight, but, like, the sort of the normal by-the-book sort of guy. Again, here, Brian is kind of acting as the bridge between, like, the law and the criminals. Like, he's just like, all right, like, I know what's going on here, but I also know the cops, and I'm sort of in between both worlds. I think that the dynamic is the sort of the by-the-book guy and the freewheeling kind of reckless one is in a bunch of movies. It just
good
feels
cop,
like
bad cop kind of thing. Yeah,
a lot of these Paul Walker movies also kind of fit exactly into that, because, again, Brian is kind of the, you know, the opposite, the yin to the yang.
Yep, I agree with you. One of the very fast connections that I saw in this movie was Brian is getting away.
Yep.
And he's driving. And it's so much like he's driving through the favelas, right? And he also does, like, the drive backwards, gets the guy to wreck his car, but just, like, that whole driving through, like, very tight streets and Brian being like, I got it, I'll just reverse. Driving the whole thing backwards through, like, a very tight street, I was like, but it did remind me of the favelas a lot.
Sure.
Yeah, this reminded me of Fast and Furious.
At one point, I think he finds a Corona bottle on the... it's probably not a Corona bottle, but he finds a clear bottle on the bottom of the ocean. I was just like, oh.
Yes, it wasn't a Corona bottle. It was like a liquor bottle or something.
No, there's a beer bottle he finds.
Really?
Yeah, there's a beer
it
bottle.
It has the sand in it? I remember that.
Yeah, I think it's a beer bottle.
Okay.
I mean, there's a club scene that we're talking about. There's a club scene in Too Fast as well. This is not a Too Fast thing, but one of the other big things, the only other thing I bolded, I think, was there's an underwater fist bump, which I feel like if Fast and Furious ever had, like, an underwater scene, it feels like it would fit in right there.
I was going to ask you, we don't have an underwater scene yet, really, right? Like, the submarine is underwater, but we don't have, like, an underwater, like, underwater fighting scene.
I don't think so.
No, you know what I keep doing is I keep thinking about the fucking Italian Job now and them shooting into the water at the beginning of the Italian Job.
Yes.
And, like, that's what I'm thinking. And because it's now canon, I keep thinking that that's the underwater scene that I'm remembering from Fast and the Furious, but it is not.
The closest thing we get, there's these scenes where, like, Tej is by the water, like, in Suki's drawing, and that's when Roman meets Suki and Roman meets Tej. But I think the closest thing we get to a water action scene is probably at the end when Brian drives the boat on, or the car onto the boat. That's as it may as well be, like, landlocked, because they're not in the water. At the end, Roman goes underwater by the submarine, but, like, there's no other water that I know of.
That's what I was thinking. Like, I was trying to remember if there's, like, a fight water scene, but it's, like, just the submarine. So they're not, like, fighting underwater. But so maybe we're gonna get a nice underwater scene. We didn't even get one in Hobbs and Shaw. You know, and they're, like, on the island type thing.
Samoa. I mean, I'd rather have outer space than water, but, yeah.
No, I mean, well, you gotta go water first. If we're gonna go up, we're gonna go down.
True. Do you have any other Fast and Furious connections?
No, I don't. Let's talk about the ending, and then I'll finish it off with one of my with my little tidbit that I've been saving.
Okay.
Did we talk about the ending?
I mean, we talked about the end where they're on the boat and they get all the money.
Yeah. Was that suffice for?
Oh yeah. Like I ran out of things. Oh, actually, I do want to say though, there's basically like a 20-minute or 30-minute like final action scene where like it turns out everybody's crooked and they're all coming for each other and Brian's trying to like save themselves and like get people back and try to make deals and blah blah blah. And at one point, Sam, Jessica Alba, is running away, and a guy's chasing her, and she slams... Like, this is... I mean, in a movie that I did not love, this was a crazy moment that I very much enjoyed. She slams a guy's fingers in, like, a very big boat door, right?
Yes.
And he screams and screams and screams, and then she's, like, trying to call for Mayday or help or whatever.
And she locks his hand. She locks it, too. So yeah. She, like...
It's, like, it's shut.
He's viced. Yeah.
This dude headbutts and shatters a boat window... And then uses his other hand to, like, open the door. I was like, what the fuck is happening? Like, that is
a good move,
crazy.
Dude. Yeah, I was like, that was very resourceful. Like, I don't think I could have thought of that.
No, especially since, like, you have, like, all you have is, like, pain shooting through your brain. Like, searing, blinding pain.
Yeah, well, I want to know if my reaction would be like, oh, I must solve this. Or like, oh, fuck, I'm just so in pain. Because, like, getting your fingers smashed would hurt, so.
And then the other gruesome thing, I guess, is that I mentioned before that they use the Nas. They shoot the Nas underwater into the back of the airplane, and it blows up the airplane as Brian flies away.
And we see
very briefly Josh Brolin's, like, entire, like, the skin and everything just go off. Like, so I thought first, I'd take his face off, but also just like the Nas just blew up and like just made him like basically turned him into an instant skeleton. I was like, this is crazy too.
Yeah, it hits the fuel tank of the plane or something, right? Like a fuel tank in the plane and blows up, shreds him like Two-Face. Like it just melts his face off, and we see it for like a split second. It's pretty weird.
Okay, so I have a couple other bits of trivia, but I can wait. So what is your what's the tidbit you've been saving?
At the end of the movie, I swear he says it, when they drop the cannon, right?
Yep. The first time or the second time?
The second time, very end of the movie, and he jumps into the water, because, like, he doesn't say anything. He, like, sees kind of, like, the glint of gold, right? The glimmer of it, like, through the water. Scott jumps back in the water. Fucking Paul Walker looks at him and goes, "You jag off."
Huh.
That is, like, a very regional Pittsburgh colloquialism.
Huh, okay.
Like, nobody else says jag-offs.
Yeah, like, not jerk-off. Like, I guess jerk-off is the common one, right? Or, like...
Jerk-off, yeah.
Jack-off, maybe. No. But, like, yeah, jerk-off, jag-off. J-A-G-O-F-F?
Yeah, he doesn't say jack-off. He says jag-off. And, like, I was like, holy shit. Where did Paul Walker pick up this Pittsburghism?
Because he was a California boy, right?
So I want to go back and see, like, what the subtitles say about that part of it. And see if he actually said jag-off. I mean, obviously, I could just been hearing jag-off, right? Because, like, that's what I would have known it as. But it was, like, a very nice thing for me. I was like, oh, did somebody from Pittsburgh write this script? You know, because, like, that's something that, like, I would write into the script, you know, PG-13. You're like, okay, jack-off. You would write it, and nobody else would notice. Yeah, so I'm curious.
Oh, my God. So this movie was written by Matt Johnson, who has written three movies. A movie called Tracers, which I do not know, Into the Blue, and a legitimately amazing, incredible movie that I think Mike Manzi and I have talked about on this very podcast, Torque, which is kind of, sort of a Fast and Furious parody a little bit, but, like, genuinely amazing, which is directed by Joseph Kahn, who directed Bodied, who directed Detention, who's done, like, all of Taylor Swift's big videos. Genuinely incredible movie. Matt Johnson wrote that one, too. So I don't know. I was going to see if he was from Pittsburgh, but I just got sidetracked by...
Oh,
man.
Yeah.
Let me look up. I'm going to see if he's from Pittsburgh, though. Because, like, even if he, like... Okay, so say he's from Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah.
And he writes into the script. Paul Walker then reads the script. He's like, what does this mean? Like, he would probably just change it. Unless, like, the character was from Pittsburgh. Like, there's no... You know what I mean? Like, it's a very weird...
Yeah.
All right, so Matt Johnson, known for writing Six Things, Tracers, a couple other movies in pre-production. PA. Virtually no information about him on IMDb, so I cannot tell you, but maybe you can tell from his, like, frosted tips whether or not he is whether he's from Pittsburgh or not. Kind of looks like Pittsburgh to me.
Yeah, he definitely does. He looks Pittsburgh-y to me.
He doesn't not look like he's from Pittsburgh.
He doesn't. He definitely doesn't not look like he's from Pittsburgh. You're right.
It'd be really cool if, like, I clicked on the picture to expand, and it'd be, like, really cool if, like, in the background of that picture, it's like a Primanti Bros menu, just like, ah, yes.
In his sunglasses, like, the reflection in his sunglasses is just like...
It's like the Three Bridges. It's just a bunch of bridges, yeah.
Exactly. He's just at the point. Yeah.
So a couple of things about this movie. Number one, Scott Kahn was also acting with Paul Walker in Varsity Blues, another movie that I said we had up for the running. Yeah. This is apparently a modernized remake of a movie called The Deep from 1977, which I do not know, but that would make sense, I guess, right? Like a just a bunch of people find treasure and they try to figure out how to get the treasure and they run into problems.
Would make sense.
Very small, cool thing. Jessica Alba, the same year, also appeared in Sin City. So I was, I think, a couple years off, but like Sin City was, I knew it was in high school. Because of five, Sin City, also alongside Miss Devon Aoki.
Oh, touche, you're right.
So a little bit
another
of a
fast connection.
Too fast connection right there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because Devon Aoki does not exactly have a ton of acting credits, I don't think. But for both the stars of this movie to act alongside her over like a 3-year stretch, like, small world.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's all I got to say about Into the Blue. Any other notes, any other thoughts about Into the Blue?
No, I covered all my notes. Like I said, I actually enjoyed this movie. I definitely watch it in a weird way because I'm watching for Brian O'Connorisms.
Right. That, like, I think Brick Mansions is a lot more fun than this. Did you like Brick Mansions more than this?
Yeah. I think Brick Mansions is more wacky. I like the RZA. There's, like, a lot of parkour. It felt even closer to a Fast and the Furious movie. Like, he's definitely, like, Brian O'Connor right. in Brick Mansions, right? This one was fun, though. Like, I didn't mind it. We've seen so many worse movies. This was just brain mush. It's Paul Walker and Jessica Alba. It was a PG-13 movie. I knew what the vibe of it was going in. I'm fine with it.
I think watching for Brian, as opposed to just watching for Paul, made Brick Mansions go from a movie that I liked or would have liked to really liked. This movie,
yes.
It took it from a movie that I would have turned off to a movie that I was like, I'll watch it.
Okay.
It's not, like, I did not love this movie, but I like watching, because I like Paul Walker. I think that he's got a charm. He's got a charisma on screen. I like being able to fit this into the weird canon that we've built for the character
yes.
and for the actor. My problem with this movie is that it just doesn't try anything that I've not seen 100 times before. Like, it just feels so stale. And that's not, like, a bad thing,
that's
but it's just, like, I don't need to see that. You know what I mean? I just want to, I want something more exciting. I know that's not going to be every movie, but I was just sort of hoping for a little bit more. Not that this movie was necessarily going to, like, I felt like if this movie was a great movie, I would have heard a lot more about it. Like, I don't mind that I watched it. I'm glad that
we do it for this, yeah.
But, yeah. But, you know, if we ever do another Paul Walker lap, and if this goes on for infinity, we might. At some point, I want to watch Varsity Blues. I guess I could just watch it, you know, on my own. I'm not bothered that I watch this movie. I just was kind of hoping for a little bit more.
That's fair. That's totally acceptable. You're allowed to feel that way.
The next pit stop that we're doing, I'm not going to say it on air. It's going to be a surprise. We're not watching anything. It's a no-watch.
Okay.
It's a no-prep episode. It's going to come out on Christmas Eve. So originally, I sort of mixed things around a little bit because we're going to have a Christmas Eve episode. We're going to have a New Year's Eve episode. I was going to have like kind of a look back, like a reflect back on the year of Too Fast, Too Forever and everything like that. And I feel like things have shifted, especially now that the Netflix series, the Spy Racers or whatever it's called, is coming out.
Yeah.
We're going to cover that in January. And so things shifted back to sort of their normal schedule. So I think Christmas Eve, there's a special thing that you and I are going to share. I don't know if you know about yet. I keep teasing this a little bit. I will share with you soon.
I don't know.
But it's also going to kind of be like a reflection, like a, maybe we'll talk about the Toys for Tots thing, like whatever. Like it's going to sort of be
cool.
a more laid back kind of holiday focused year in reflection Too Fast, Too Forever. So no homework, to use another one of Brian Rodriguez's terms. So nothing to watch for 2 weeks. The pit stop after that, so in 4 weeks, we will be covering Netflix series. So that comes out the day after Christmas.
Cool.
So there's nothing you can do now, but when that comes out, if you want to listen having seen it, go through that starting after Christmas. But for next episode, next pit stop, no homework.
Nice.
But between now and then, Joe, we've got a very special movie called Tokyo Drift.
Ooh, I can't wait for Kara to watch it.
She's also going to watch the end, the credit scene in 6 and see what happens there. And
yep.
Then we will go from 7, 8, and Hobbs and beyond. So very exciting things. Tokyo Drift, and then a special episode, and then To Furious 7. So, and that'll do it for this year in Too Fast, Too Forever, because the episode after that
cool.
is 2020. A new decade for Too Fast, Too Forever.
2-0 Fast, 2-0 Forever.
It's our decade. Like, it's our time to shine.
It is.
Any other thoughts about anything that we talked about in this episode before we close up shop?
Nope, that was good. I liked Into the Blue. I would watch it again.
Well, for all things Too Fast, Too Forever, you can go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/TooFastTooForever, or at TooFastTooForever on Twitter and Instagram. Email us, family@cageclub.me. Check out our Patreon page at TooFastTooForever.com. Leave us a review, rate, review, subscribe, if you would be so kind. More importantly than anything, like I said, just email, like we keep saying over and over, email in rankings, email in
mm-hmm.
songs. You asked something, oh, your vending machine snacks, what would you put in your vending machine?
Yes, what would you put in, if we curated a vending machine for you, what kind of fun regional snacks would you have in it?
You jag off. Come back next week for Tokyo Drift, come back in 2 weeks for a very special, it's going to make sense sort of as a holiday, it's not at all a holiday thing, but it also sort of makes sense as a holiday thing. You'll see what's going on. 2 weeks in here on Too Fast, Too Forever. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe, too.
And we'll see you next time right here on Too Fast, Too Forever.